This is John Little from DFW's only all-news morning show, the KRLV Morning News. Keep listening. We'll tell you the top three things you need to know every 15 minutes.
And you can count on us for any severe weather information, breaking news, or traffic red alerts immediately when they happen.
Now, the Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
And here we go. It's a Thursday morning at KRLD, August 6th. It's the Mid-Morning Mic Check. Mike Rogers, Austin York with you on this International Root Beer Float Day.
Oh, well, I've like had a few of those in my life.
That's good. And if that doesn't suit you, then it's National IPA Day.
Okay, now that's a different kind of beer.
Beer, right. That is,
I'm not a big fan of both.
No, I find that the IPAs to be a little bitter.
Yeah, and you get a little drunk. You start tasting too many of those things if you're not a big beer fan. By the way, I have to say, my dad listened to the show yesterday, and he was terribly disappointed with my answers for labor-intensive jobs, considering all the ones that he's had.
All right,
he's like, you haven't worked a lick in your life.
Well, I mean, your most labor-intensive, you said, was filing.
Filing or the bumper cars.
Yeah, well,
he was in Vietnam. He had to pull those latrines, those big buckets of all that crap out there, and start it on fire.
He wins.
Oh, I can't believe they made him do that.
That's just, well,
the grunts had to do that back in the day.
Literally grunts.
Lit it on fire.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, can you imagine the smell?
So, yeah.
Yeah, he wins.
I wouldn't, by far, hands down. That beats my construction work by a mile, too.
Yeah, poor in East Texas ain't the way to go sometimes.
All right, we got a good show for you today. There is a new scandal at the Women's Tour de France. I didn't know they had a Women's Tour de France.
I thought there was just the Tour de France. Everybody can jump on in. I thought the French were very progressive and inclusive. What's going on over there?
This one, it's Women's Tour de France, and apparently there is a problem with some of the contestants using
doping?
Specially designed bras.
Oh.
To get, it's kind of like at the Olympics. Remember when the guys were down their pants?
Get a little extra lift.
Fabric and lift on the side.
That's right.
That's what's going on. So we're going to get into that. State Fair of Texas. Brother, that's coming up.
Yeah, we're going to be there every day.
We always are. And they've got the, later this hour, we'll get into the semifinalists and the Big Tex Choice Awards, some of the new foods at the State Fair. As always, your input is welcome at 945-766-1080. You can text or call. We'd love to hear from you. We start this morning, though, with the president's pick for attorney general, who is already the acting attorney general, but his confirmation is facing a new roadblock.
Maine Senator Susan Collins, who's in a tough re-election fight, announcing she's a no and will vote against Blanche, saying the Department of Justice has become increasingly political, adding Mr. Blanche has taken several actions that have further eroded the department's independence. Without Collins, Blanche can likely only afford to lose one more Republican vote, and at least two others are still on the fence. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, who has increasingly been defying the president since losing to a Trump-backed primary challenger. The two skeptical senators meeting with Blanche for over an hour late yesterday, but emerging tight-lipped.
Now, in Collins' case, she's been taking a lot of heat in her Senate race for casting the deciding vote that confirmed Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who then voted to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Oh, how dare he!
And it may just be an attempt to win back some of those voters who are still angry with her about all that, but Collins, who describes herself as pro-choice, she's saying that she won't vote for Blanche in part because of his promise to ban the mailing of abortion medication.
But she's in that tight race. That's why she's doing this.
Exactly. If she weren't up for re-election this year,
she'd be rubber stamping this, and let's just keep going.
You wouldn't hear a word about it.
You know, these nominations to me are just becoming increasingly political for the last, almost a decade now, where it used to be that whoever the president nominated, that was their guy, whether they liked him or not.
Many times unanimously.
Yeah, and what was it? Especially on the Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg got 99 votes.
Right,
that would never happen today.
Speaking of that Senate race in Maine, now we all remember the Graham Plackner story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who was going to be Susan Collins' opponent in November, but a series of scandals forced him to drop out of the race. Well, the Republicans are dealing with a growing scandal of their own, though. It's around a seat that they had considered to be safe this November. It's Ohio Congressman Max Miller. Told you about him. He's up for re-election, facing calls to drop out after being accused accused of abusing his ex-wife and their two-year-old child. But unlike Plattner, who dropped out of the race, Miller says it ain't going to happen with him.
Congressman Max Miller of Ohio is defiant, saying not even President Trump could push him out of his re-election race as he faces abuse allegations from his ex-wife. Miller's ex-wife, Emily, claims he abused her. In a February police report obtained by ABC News, she claims he threw her against a wall, once held a gun to her head, and another time threw hot water on her. Miller says she's lying.
My former wife is engaging in a pattern of reporting incredible, serious, and destructive allegations with absolutely no evidence.
Now, adding to the intrigue here, and we've talked about this, is the fact that Miller's ex is the daughter of Ohio Senator Bernie Moreno, who is one of the ones calling for Miller to drop out.
My bet is he's going to drop out, and this is just the amount of pressure. You remember how much pressure it took Graham Plattner to actually go out?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when the money dried up, and they said, you're not going to get anything, and more allegations came out, and that's going to happen here. I think Mike Johnson probably is having a meeting with him and say, look, let's figure out your exit strategy, and we're doing it now.
Got a little cal sheet for you. What happens first? Max Miller drops out, or Jeanine Pirro gets fired?
Oh, Pirro first. I don't even know, because I think Pirro might just take herself out, really, because say, I'm done with this, and she'll go back. She's got a good job wherever, OAN or Fox News or Newsmax. She can get a job there.
This Max Miller story is not the only bad headline for the Buckeye State, though. The child endangerment case, known as the House of Horrors, has put new attention on laws establishing a minimum age for marriage. And that is because in this case in Ohio, in which 16 children ranging in age from 18 months to 18 years were found living in a single room, it turns out they all had the same mother. She is one of the four people arrested in the case. 33-year-old Elizabeth Siders. Now, let's let that sink in for a minute.
33,
and she had 16 kids.
It was all hers?
It wasn't? Oh, how is that even possible? Well, she got married when she was just 15 years old in West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Where, at the time, there was no minimum age. Ooh. Now there is, although it's still just 16. Same as Texas, by the way. Ohio, meanwhile, currently it's 70. But lawmakers are now debating a bill that would raise it to 18. It's all reminiscent of the original House of Horrors out in California, where 13 kids were rescued from their parents' home back in 2018. Well, in an exclusive interview, News Nation's Brian Enton spoke with one of those kids, Jalissa Turpin, who's now 19.
In Ohio, the mom, through the courts, is fighting to try to see her children.
Yeah.
You know, she wants to see them.
Yeah.
Says she loves them.
Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
No, it's okay. But what do you think of that?
I think that is really dumb. And I do not think, I've seen people saying, oh, she's the victim or whatever. I believe my mom was a victim, but that does not give her any, any excuse to do what she did to her kids.
Jalissa says even seeing her mother in court made her ill.
I didn't ever know my mom, and she was always in another room. I never actually saw her or had a conversation. The only time I ever saw her face pretty much was when she was coming towards me to abuse me or beat me up or whatever, you know, something bad. I would go to court sometimes and I would see just the back of her head or even just talking about the stuff with my parents, and I would get physically sick where I would throw up because of the anxiety from it, and it really was hard to heal when I was okay, let's start healing, but then I'm gonna see her in a week, you know, or I'm gonna be in court talking about her in a week. It was hard.
Now, they were rescued, Jalissa and her siblings, they had to learn everything: reading, writing, how to eat a meal, sitting at the table,
basic etiquette,
even something as simple as how to have a friend.
Did you know that you could have a friend?
While I was in the house?
Yeah.
No. No. I don't know. I thought that people having friends and neighbors talking to each other and all that stuff, I thought that was fake or just stuff that's in the movies or something. I didn't know that I could actually have a friend. I also didn't know that like school was even normal. I didn't know like where I would get a friend.
But through therapy and God, Jalissa says she has made it to the other side. She just bought her own home and finds healing spending time with her siblings and dog. She believes there will be another side for the Ohio kids too.
Like it literally is like so hard to adjust, and like for these kids in Ohio, them coming out into this world when they've been isolated their whole life, is it's gonna be hard. Like as much as I wish I could be like, it won't be that hard, it'll be easy, it's that's not the case. It's gonna be really hard.
You know, I have to say, this girl, she was 11 when they were rescued. What a messed up childhood.
She's 19 now. She sounds great.
She sounds like she's got it together.
Both of us were commenting on how well spoken she was, how eloquent she was, considering what she went through. She's got a house now. She just bought her own house.
No,
at 19
for her.
That's crazy. Good though.
By the way, there are only 3 states left in which there is no minimum age for marriage. Mississippi.
I would have guessed that.
New Mexico.
That's surprising.
And you wouldn't guess this one. California. Now, in each of those states, minors have to have parental consent and a judge's approval. But beyond that, there's no numerical limit.
Yeah, my mom said I could. So yeah. Just sign it off. All right.
When we come back, off to Oxnard we go, where 1 week into training camp for the Cowboys, Brian brought us. He's going to have the latest for us coming up as the Mid-Morning Mic Check continues.
A deep dive into the day's top stories, weekdays from 10 to noon. This is the Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
And the Mid-Morning Mic Check continues this Thursday morning, and we go out to Oxnard.
Yeah.
Every morning during training camp at 10:20, we bring in our Cowboys insider, Brian Broaddus, former
Super Bowl champ,
now 105.3 The Fan. And he's with us right now. Brian, in your honor, I've worn a quarter zip today.
That's right. It's a little, because it's freezing in this studio.
And I could be down on the beach looking good. How you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. It's nice to hear that the temperature in our building is once again back to where it's roughly about 62 degrees in those studios.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of strange when we're at home and we walk through the parking lot and everybody's looking at us like, what are these dudes doing wearing
parkas?
And yeah, exactly. But it's good to hear that you got the quarter zip on. You might just go with the vest this morning here in Oxford. Maybe not the full quarter zip, but we'll go with the best today. But everything's going well. Thanks.
All right, let's start with the new video gate.
That's
right. This is Christian Parker.
Well, apparently the team told the media, you are not allowed to film. And then the media got upset with this. And then Jerry said, oh, go ahead, film whatever you want. Am I getting this right? Can you explain this controversy?
Yeah, and listen, I can fully understand it because I got this really cool new device called an Osmo, which is like this camera that can film and it moves. And it's a beautiful piece of equipment that a 62-year-old man is probably not very accustomed to using, but I'm getting the hang of it. And yeah, there's ways that you can film practice beautifully with it, you know? And, you know, but that's the thing about this is camp and, you know, training camp, and there's people want access and people want to be able to see, and there's people, you know, they're listening to us right now that are sitting on a beach somewhere, you know, somewhere else, or they're, you know, up at their fishing, and you know, they're just, there's people want to know what's going on with the football team, and they also want to be able to take their phones out or their iPads, whatever they need, and they want to be able to say, well, what happened to practice today, you know? And so, you know, that's the thing that the big issue is that when I worked for DallasCowboys.com, we did a show called Training Camp Live, and we actually filmed like part of the practice. Like we took, you know, the one-on-one period, or we took the team period, and we showed the fans, we gave them like 12 minutes of, hey, this is what's going on at practice right now. And then Sean Payton, who was coaching at the Saints, called me one day and he goes, hey man, that training camp live stuff you do is incredible. That's incredible work. And I'm like, you watch that? And he goes, yeah, every day I sit down at lunch and watch you guys. And it clicked to me that like, okay, here's the head coach of the New Orleans Saints watching Cowboys practice. Is probably not a good thing.
Shut it down.
And so, yeah, so I immediately went to Derek Eagleton at the time and I said, Derek, I go, Sean Payton told me he's really enjoying our version of Training Camp Live. And so when you're working on the .com side of things, you really have to be very mindful of, you know, it's the team's site. It's, you know, you got to be mindful. You got to try and help your coaches. But what you're having right now is everybody has access to these practices. You could come and watch denounce these practices, and you could be a fan in the stands, and you could take your iPhone 16 out, and you can film drills, and you can do stuff, you can post it, and you can, so it's the media is trying to do their job, and we're mindful of it to a point. But also, though, the fans are filming and they're posting stuff, too. And listen, Pat McAfee, at ESPN, he posted a clip the other day from practice. And it wasn't from a Todd Archer or John Machado or Calvin Watkins or Brian Broaddus. It was a random fan clip. Oh, and so if you if you have a camera and you're sitting in the stands and you're filming practice, you can post whatever you want. And this is the issue. And some teams are having to deal with this right now. Green Bay is asking the media and their fans not to film practice. The Houston Texans are asking the media. They're like, hey, listen, if you really want to help the team, please don't do this.
Right.
But we're also about content, man. We've got bills to pay. We've got, we've got sponsors that are expecting us to deliver on the things that we promise we do. Hey, we've got the best training camp coverage in the Metroplex. And there's a reason why, because we're willing to go the extra mile. But, the team, the coaches are like, hey, we really don't want you filming this stuff. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong. But on the flip side of that, Jerry and Steven realize that, listen, we do spend a lot of money to come out here, but if they're doing things right on this field right now that they're going to do in the Giants game, well,
that's on them.
A little bit of trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
That's on them. Yeah, for sure. But it's been a deal where for like the first 10 minutes before we went on the field, there was this band. We all said, okay, cool. We now know the rules. And then some of the media members went to Tad and said, hey, we can't do this. And Jerry and Steven agreed with him. So we're back on the filming policy, but we have to be a little bit more mindful of everything. We're not like, I'll film all 40 minutes of practice if you let, but I think I need to be a little bit more mindful of what we're doing.
Yeah, help the Cowboys win, man. That's what we need.
There we go.
Jerry likes those clicks, right? Hey, Brian, thank you so much again. As always, we're going to catch up with you again tomorrow morning at 10:20, more from training camp in Oxnard. That's our Cowboys insider, Brian Brought it here on KRLD. All right, when we come back, hackers, possibly Iranian hackers, targeting water systems in the U.S. So how do you fight the hackers? Well, you bring in your own hackers, of course. Hack the hackers. That's straight ahead as the Mid-Morning Mic Check continues on KRLD.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
Well, it started just a few weeks ago when someone launched a cyber attack on 30 different municipal water systems in the state of Minnesota. Since then, authorities in almost a dozen other states have reported similar activity with their water systems. Now, U.S. intelligence officials suspect, they don't have proof, but they suspect that Iran may have been involved.
By the way, is everything digital now? You can hack into anything, even the water system?
Evidently.
No levers anymore?
Bring in ABC's Jim Ryan for more on the story. Jim, this has happened before, right?
Yeah, there is some precedent to this, of course, Mike. Remember back in early 2024, the town of Muleshoe, up toward the Texas Panhandle, it's thought that Russian-backed hackers got into that water supply system. They caused the downtown water tower to overflow for a time. There was flooding in the downtown street. They did get it all corrected after a short time, but it really illustrates what can go wrong. 50,000 water supply companies or departments in the whole United States, most of them are small and rural. Most of them don't have the kind of money to spend. After all, they're fighting for budget dollars with the local police department, fire department, the school district in some cases, and they can't afford cybersecurity. So that's really what we're up against right now. The cyber attacks coming from overseas and hitting us right where it counts the most, Mike.
I've still never been able to figure out why the Russians targeted Muleshoe, but what cities are we talking about this time, Jim?
Well, there are cities in Atlanta, cities across Michigan that are looking at that. There are something like 17 states now where this has been happening. Thought it was a dozen yesterday. The number continues to rise. So, it's primarily small water departments again, but some larger ones as well. But why Muleshoe? It's a good question. I think maybe because it was there, they just wanted to show that they can do this, and sure enough, they did. Again, that was tracked back to Russian hackers, but no real explanation as to why Russia was was doing this in 2024 and why Muleshoe was the one that was picked. The same kind of lack of explanation for why any municipal water supply was chosen this time, apparently by the Iranians.
Yes. Now, tell me about that. How have the Iranians come to be suspected here?
The war part of it, I think. Cybersecurity specialists within the U.S. government are saying that that's where their evidence is leading. Now, I mean, there's still some dispute about it. President Trump says he doesn't think it was the Iranians. Others inside the infrastructure are saying that it probably was. But I think that's kind of where it goes, that it stands to reason that it would be Iran. Although there are hackers, state-sponsored and otherwise, around the world. So we may find out it had nothing at all to do with Iran.
So what are some of the impacts that we're seeing on these water systems? Is there a drop in pressure, that sort of thing?
Well, drop in pressure. There could be some, you know, in the worst case scenario, beyond what happened in Muleshoe with the water tower overflowing, there could be some issues with water quality. You know, it doesn't take much for water pressure to drop, and that allows contaminants to get into the water system. So, I mean, there are some real nightmare scenarios out there waiting. It hasn't happened yet, but yet is the operative here, Mike, and certainly they're trying to keep this from happening. Now, so how do you combat this? I mean, the local citizen, you and I, the people who are consumers of the local water department, there's not much we can do, but there is a group of hackers, white hat hackers, as they're known, folks who are specialists in this kind of thing, and they're going around the country as volunteers and sitting down with municipal water supplies and the people who run them and telling them, look, here's how you need to fortify your defenses, beefing up your internet security so that people can't hack into it from outside, and then putting that into place, even bringing in some equipment to help do that. So, yeah, there are white hats out there trying to combat this sort of thing.
I guess the really scary thing is if they can hack their way into a water system, what's next? The sky's the limit, I guess.
It is. Yeah. You know, nuclear power plants, potentially, even standard coal burning power plants. Who knows? But I think you could sit down and draw out all sorts of scenarios, and each one is more terrifying than the last.
Indeed. Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate it. That's ABC's Jim Ryan with us. Like you said, I mean, everything
is hackable.
Hack their way into anything now.
That's just what the crazy thing is. And it's great, this banking system and everything. Your money is more accessible. That's what I always worry about as somebody who's just doing everyday life. But I always think, what if I really got hacked and they took everything? I mean, what would happen? Well, and it's easier and easier to do these days.
You want to bring, this is modern warfare. Do you want to bring a country to its knees?
Oh my God,
in
hit the
21st
water supply,
century, that's it.
Anything like that.
That's how you do it. Coming up, here's an amazing factoid. We are less than 2 months away from the opening of the State Fair of Texas.
Didn't we just end the State Fair of Texas just a few weeks ago?
Listen, brother, you can't talk about the fair without talking about the food. Big Tex Choice Award finalists, we'll talk about that straight ahead on the Mid-Morning Mic Check.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
You're talking about the new salmonella outbreak, jalapenos.
Oh, man, I know that's going to really affect some people. They love their jalapenos.
Well, Chipotle and Qdoba.
Those are some pretty big places.
Uh-huh. They pulled the jalapenos off their menu, at least for now.
I know Taco Bell's like, thank God.
I know, right? No salmonella at the State Fair of Texas, though, we hope. And they have this morning announced there are 15 finalists in the Big Tex Choice Awards.
Ooh, now some of this is hard. I'm thinking about my clogged arteries just reading some of these things.
These are the new food creations that may or may not be served up at the fair this year. We'll know which ones when the winners are announced later this month.
All right.
But in all, they had 77 items submitted, many by people who work all year long coming up with these creations.
And we've interviewed quite a few of them the last couple of years.
Among the savory finalists, you've got the Burger Chop Tater Taco.
Okay.
This is a taco containing a chopped up burger patty.
That sounds all right.
All right, with cheese, coleslaw, and tater tots.
I'm not a huge coleslaw guy, but I like the tater tots. I'd give that a try.
The Flamin' Crunch Pizza.
Oh, jeez.
This is your basic cheese pizza, but after it comes out of the oven, they top it with jalapeno queso blanco, buffalo ranch dressing, and Flamin' Hot Cheetos dust.
They forget the cyclospora. This is explosive diarrhea. You eat that.
That's right. This is amazing. make. Cyclospora is tame in comparison to this.
Just eat some of this.
Flamin' Crunch Pizza. Among the sweet finalists, forget all the rest, because Fletcher's, which rarely changes its menu, is out this year with a chocolate corny dog.
Okay.
Instead of a weenie inside, the breading is filled with milk chocolate fudge. I'm a big no on that.
You don't like fudge at all. I don't know why. I thought you have a sweet tooth a little bit too, don't you?
Not fudge.
Not fudge though. All right.
I'm not a fudge guy.
It's covered with something that instead of the breading, it's some kind of jelly thing.
I don't know why. Well, hopefully it'll be better than the pickled beer.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was. I mean, anything could be better. I think that was just an experiment. I don't even know if they're going to bring that back next year. After us, after she brought it to us and we drank a little bit, she saw our faces. We're a little bitter.
We love the Fletcher's Amber.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
We don't want, but that beer was rough.
Yeah.
New category this year: drink. A drink finalist: a cornflake, Kellogg's cornflakes in a milkshake.
I guess
a soft serve peach Bellini float and something called a tropical cocoa fresca.
I can only imagine, but I don't know.
The affair opens September 25th. That is 7 weeks from tomorrow, the state fair time. And
you know we're going to have to try a lot of this stuff, so
I know.
Better be ready. I can tell you, I always bring some Imodium. Just in case.
Just a stash, right?
Yeah, just in case. A stash up on it.
So I think we're going to be in the same location in the, what building? The Taste of Texas building?
The agricultural stuff was.
Yeah, so we'll see. Details to come, but we're going to be there every flipping day, every weekday anyway.
And we enjoy meeting every one of you guys, always come out.
So mark that on your calendar. State fair time, you want to come out and say hey. Mid-morning mic check on KRLD. They're going to continue after this short break. Mike Rogers, Austin York, stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Joe Kelly from the KRLD Morning News. As you're listening to the Mid-Morning Mic Check, the rest of our team is hard at work in the 24-hour Breaking News Center. We'll break in immediately with severe weather, breaking news, and traffic red alerts.
And this is Chad Benson. I'll break through the noise and break down the day's top stories coming up at noon.
Now, the Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
11:07 at KRLD. As we continue the Mid-Morning Mic Check into hour number two on a Thursday morning, and I want to let you know that we are keeping a very close eye on a developing story. It could be sources are telling KRLD News that there's been a police officer shot this morning in North Texas.
Yeah, and that the suspect is on the loose. Police believe they know where he is, and they're trying to find the suspect. But we've got our own KRLD's Russell Scott, who's going to the scene. That's where the officer, the PIO, the public information officer is going to go. We're going to get an update on that as soon as we can, but
we just know at this point it's in the Carrollton Farmers Branch area.
Yeah, and that they are helping out, and I think that the last thing we knew is something happened around Sam's Club on eastbound 635 on the service road out there.
Okay, all right. I know where that is. Yeah.
So that's all we know, and we're working to get the latest information on that.
And we will have that for you as soon as we get it. Here is the mic check continues on KRLD. It's Mike Rogers, Austin York, and you, 945-766-1080. You can text, you can call, you can go to the Odyssey app and leave us a voice message. We'll get those on. And we're very excited this morning because
we've talked about him often.
For the first time, we're hearing the voice. You've heard us talk about Iron Ball. That's how he goes by, Iron Ball.
And he will never tell us his name. In fact, even when he wrote this in, he didn't tell us his name.
No, and he said he never wanted to call in or have his voice heard because he has a very distinctive Cajun accent. He's from South Louisiana.
Yes,
down in the bayou. But I guess he's finally decided that
come out of his shell a little bit, and he's got to introduce himself.
And he left us a message on the Odyssey app. I had to clean it up. I'm going to tell you right now. So, Iron Balls, if you're listening, this is...
He meant this only for us, but we can go ahead and share, because...
In its original form, this was not safe for work.
No.
But it is now. Here he is.
Bonjour. Es mi. Como se va? Hey, this is me, Iron Balls. Adios, mofo.
Okay.
And he gave us a little bit of his opinion on a current athlete. So there you go.
That's correct. Which is a story we'll get to later on in this half hour, by the way. So,
well, we're glad to know that we could put a voice to the name.
Yes, exactly. And that is a pretty thick, distinctive Cajun accent.
And I'm going to tell you, honestly, maybe he and Curtis, they have been the most loyal texters every single day.
I guarantee.
Yep.
We start this hour with the high cost of housing, which is getting higher. We learned this morning that mortgage rates have now reached their highest level in over a year. On average, a standard 30-year loan now stands at 6.81%. That's pretty high. And you add to that the fact that home prices are nearing record highs, and it's making very, very difficult for home buyers, especially young ones. But it's also a problem for people who already have a mortgage.
This rental property in Arizona is now home for Emily Arner and her family of five. The family was forced to give up their dream house just over 1 mile away after going into foreclosure.
We had no plans to ever leave. That was going to be our home.
Arner, who's a flight attendant, documenting their journey online.
We're just in pure fight or flight mode.
When her husband unexpectedly lost his job last year, they soon fell behind on mortgage payments.
We had no way to cover it, no way to pay for it. And we tried everything that we could possibly think of.
Nationwide, foreclosure filings spiked 21% in the first 6 months of this year compared to the same time last year. They're up 28% from 2 years ago.
If there are economic stresses on a household, people have to make decisions. What bill am I going to pay now? What bill am I going to put off?
And that puts them farther and farther behind they have no choice but to walk away.
Foreclosures are still well below their peak during the housing crisis more than 15 years ago. But factors like the end of pandemic-era protections, higher mortgage rates, and rising costs for insurance and property taxes are now behind the foreclosure trend moving in the wrong direction.
Should that make people worried that we could see another foreclosure crisis down the line?
I mean, I think we have some protections in place that didn't exist 20 years ago, especially at the state level.
9 months since leaving her family's house for the last time, Arner hopes her story can be a cautionary tale.
If you don't have, you know, savings or a way to cover yourself, it absolutely can happen to you. It can happen to anybody.
That is ABC's Elizabeth Schulze.
Yeah, it happened to a friend of mine. I'll never forget in the bubble of 08.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when he was living in Arizona, which is one of the hardest hit states, and he went to refi his home, and they said, you bought this thing for $145. Back then, it's worth $90 now.
Oh, no.
And then they wanted him to pay more. And he, you know what? He walked. He took up all his stuff and just left. And it hurt his credit for 10 years.
Yeah.
He said, I'm not going to buy a home anyway in 10 years. So he just rented something for the 10-year period. And finally, it went away. But still, he was one of those that chose to walk and just give it to the bank.
I'll tell you something. We bought, the first house we bought was in 1994. The interest was 9.25%.
That's crazy.
It's just insane. But we refinanced a couple of times. We sold that house and bought a new one. And the last time we refinanced was about 15 years ago. The rate had fallen all the way down to 3.25%.
Awesome.
And the guy said, when we did that and we were signing the papers, he said, by the way, he said, this is the last time you're ever going to be refinancing because it ain't going to get any lower than this.
I remember when we got lucky with a condo, I think our interest rate over there was 3.75, 3.75, 3.75, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, we didn't get much higher.
By the way, the highest foreclosure rate in Texas, according to this study, I don't know why, but it's the 77327 zip code.
That
is in Liberty County, northeast of Houston. Affordable housing, on the other hand, as we've just laid out these days, that's almost a contradiction in terms. But in San Antonio, they're making it happen, opening up a new apartment complex on the city's northwest side. It's designed for residents earning between 30% and 60% of that area's median income. Now, San Antonio, that'd be anywhere from $20,000 to $50,000 a year. This place is called the Baltazar, and this week, HUD Secretary Scott Turner took a tour, telling Austin that he likes what he saw.
It is 60 units of affordable housing between 30% and 60% AMI. It opened in 2025, and it took them only 3 months to really fill up that entire complex. It's a beautiful complex, very well done, well built, excellent materials. It's well thought out with sustainable materials like granite and plank flooring. And I met with one of the residents there. His name is Henry, and Henry comes from Chicago, and he had been in a pretty tough situation, had some health issues, but the people at Baltazar really embrace him and his 16-year-old daughter, and he lives there and has been living there now for several months. And man, I'm telling you, he said, this is not only a place for me to lay my head, but it's a place for me to be restored and to be healed. And the community that I have here is something I've never had before, and that his daughter also can see the example of what it means to be provided for and to provide a safe and healthy living space. And so hearing that testimony from him was a great encouragement. encouragement to me and how they built this with the community center for the young children to do after school homework to get a healthy snack while their parents are at work, and also the gym that they have to promote healthy and safe living. Indeed is an example that we can talk about around the country.
I see. So it can be done.
Yes. Right? And one of the things that you're hearing more and more these days, and we have some younger people who have just gotten married in our office that are trying to buy that home, that first home, and they say it's harder and harder to do these days.
Yeah.
And that's where you come into this, is the American dream still alive? Can you do it? And some people just believe at the age of 26, 27, oh my God, owning a home, that's a pipe dream.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to rent for the rest of my life.
That's just crazy to think about, because obviously when you were younger, I was younger, a home was a major achievement, but it wasn't something that was just unattainable.
It was tough, but not impossible.
No.
And now for a lot of people it is. Monthly rent at the Baltazar, by the way, it starts at these are rentals.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, you're not owning these, but the rent starts at $900, goes to about $1,260. That's these days.
That's excellent.
That's not bad.
And the thing is, too, he mentioned something, the psychological aspect of all of this is just, it does mean something when you own something that's yours, or you're renting something that you're being able to pay for, and mm-hmm. it's not, there's no government assistance. You're doing it on your own because you're working hard. That does have a major effect on you and helps you in the future.
I told you that last time we refinanced, that was in 2012.
Okay.
And we did a 15-year.
All right.
And that means it's up next summer.
Okay.
That
better
house
come
is
up with the
be
rest.
Paid for, and brother, there's going to be a party.
That's right. And I'm ready. You bring that, what was that, fire breather or something
right.
you had last time?
The fire dancer. Stony Fires.
Stony Fires.
Get her back and have a big backyard party again.
What do you think she's looking like these days?
Been a while.
Yeah.
Coming up, one of the longest running annual events in Dallas. It's not going to be in Dallas anymore. The North Texas Irish Festival is moving. Where? We'll tell you next.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
All right, in just a few minutes, we're going to check in with Russell Scott. He is on the scene at, it's in Northwest Dallas County. A local police officer has been shot. And there are different reports as to the status of the shooter, whether he got away or been caught, perhaps. But Russell's all over that story, and he's going to have more information for us here coming up in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, live report at the bottom of the hour. But again, an officer shot is what we're hearing sources tell KRLD. So, like I said, Russell Scott is on the scene. And again, for a moment there, we knew that there was a suspect that was on the loose or apprehended. We're not too sure. He's going to sort that all out for us.
Well, it is one of the most popular annual events in Dallas, but going forward, not going to be in Dallas anymore. Along with Neiman's and AT&T and the Stars, now you can add the North Texas Irish Festival to the list of businesses and events bailing on Big D.
Oh, man.
After 42 years at Fair Park, the only annual event that has run longer at Fair Park is the State Fair.
God.
Irish Festival.
Did you go to these things a few times?
I've been to a few. A lot of fun. But they're moving to Dent, starting with next year's festival, which is always held in March. It's going to be at the North Texas Fairgrounds in Dent, just off 380 in the heart of the city. Now, this event is organized by the Southwest Celtic Music Association, which says it's been looking to move the event for years now. According to the Morning News, they had also looked at Arlington, Mansfield, and Addison.
Well, they really want to move it out there.
And why leave Fair Park? Well, one of the organizers tells the news, Robert Wielanski, that it was Fair Park was just getting too run down.
Oh, man.
Quoting now, this is one of the organizers, I'll try to be polite, but Fair Park has deteriorated a lot in the last 40 years, especially in the last 10. There's been very little upkeep.
You know, that has been
End quote.
One of the main concerns for that place. Even as a guy that just goes to the Fair Park, I always just say, I hope that the city is doing enough to put back into Fair Park.
Well, they turned it over to that for-profit group.
I don't remember how long ago.
Apparently that was a disaster.
Yeah.
And then you throw in parking problems, security concerns, and the fact that after 42 years, the Irish Festival still couldn't get a long-term deal with the city.
Well,
it was always year to year.
I'm telling you, these cities have to understand this, man. You're going to have competition from outside cities. Got to do it.
So once again, Dallas City Hall.
Good Lord.
Screw up a one-car funeral.
Okay.
So the Irish Festival is moving. This year was the last. In March, they'll be in Dent. You know, we talk about lists on this show a lot. And speaking of the Morning News, they're out with one that should spark some debate. The top 25 pro athletes in Dallas Dallas-Fort Worth,
okay,
under the age of 25.
This got me.
25 and under.
Okay.
And this is timely because we do have some of the best young athletes in the country.
Yeah, a lot of them. Very young, too.
The list runs the gamut from gymnasts to golfers, track and field. We'll hit you with the top 10. A tie for 10th between Olympic gymnast Hesley Rivera.
Never heard of her.
Oh, no, no, no. Remember her? She's at the Olympics? Yeah, a couple of years back in Paris.
All right, I guess.
She's big. And Cowboys guard Tyler Booker.
I know him.
Ninth place is Dallas Wings rookie AZ Fudd.
I know that.
Caleb Downs is 8th.
Already, okay.
7th is a high school athlete.
All right.
Cooper Lutkenhouse, who is just 17 years old. He's from Justin Northwest High School. He recently won the 800-meter final at the U.S. Track and Field Championship.
Guy can book it.
Kid's running professionally for Nike now. Number 6 is the Rangers' Wyatt Langford.
All right.
And that brings us to the top 5. Number 5.
Okay.
That is Cowboys wide receiver George Pickens.
I agree with that.
He's just 25 years old. Number 4, at the tender age of 23, is the Stars' Wyatt Johnston.
Down low! Johnston scores! Wyatt Johnston! With 3:56 to go!
Would you agree, number 4, would you put him higher, lower? Where do you put him?
Yeah, I was initially thinking Jason Robertson, but he's 27 now. He's an old man.
I guess.
Wyatt Johnston is he's a good young player.
I'd put him in the top 10, there's no doubt. Number 4 is a little high for me, but
number 10,
ahead.
Definitely. Number 5, I can see him top 5.
Okay.
Number 3, back to the Cowboys, and Tyler Smith.
Tyler Smith is the best interior offensive lineman in football, according to NFL coaches and executives, and he even drew a comparison to a prime Jason Peters playing guard.
This really surprised me that he was number 3, that high. An offensive lineman, and he's good.
He's very good. He's also 25.
Yeah, but I was thinking they would probably go somebody a little bit more high profile.
Now, number 2 and number 1, this is where you and I are kind of in agreement on this. Here's number 2.
Cooper Flag again.
Watch Cooper Flag gear out and in with authority.
That's my number 1, man. That's not my number 1. I'm sorry.
I would agree with you. Cooper Flagg, he's just 19 years old. And it's right. If he's number 2, who could possibly be number 1?
Well, go ahead. Play it.
The best local pro athlete 25 or under, according to this survey, is the Wings' Paige Beckers.
Beckers with a steal. With 2. With 1. Let's it fly. Got it!
Okay. Definitely top 5.
I just think not number 1. I mean, it's not, again, I'm not knocking her ability in the WNBA, but it's not a huge league in this market. It's becoming a little bit more popular, obviously. But Cooper Flagg, coming off the Luka trade, he had the whole franchise to say. This is where I think, and he's looking like he is everything advertised. Paige Beckers didn't have that kind of pressure on her.
Definitely top 5.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't, and nothing against her.
No.
She's an incredible
People
talent.
People are going to say you chauvinists and whatever.
But
number 1.
Cooper Flagg, the pressure on that kid.
Yeah.
Coming in his rookie year.
And this was like, hey, you can't miss with this guy. He's only 18 and he seems like he's answering all the calls. Paige was just thought, all right, she's going to be a very good player. Number 1 overall pick. That's great. But not to save a franchise.
Cooper Flagg, he's got to be number 1. All right. When we come back into the second half hour, there's some of the writers in the Women's Tour de France. I didn't know there was a Women's Tour de France. But
Neither
there is. And some of the writers, they are acting like a bunch of boobs. Literally.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number 1 for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
Well, a war of words has erupted in the wake of Michigan's Democratic primary, in which a former state health official, a self-described Democratic socialist, backed by Bernie Sanders, among others, he won a very close race against a more centrist Democrat to represent that party in Michigan's Senate race.
Michigan's new Democratic Senate nominee, Abdul El-Sayed, firing back at President Trump after the president said this during an event in Las Vegas.
When I watch Abdul, he's full of
He hates Jews and he hates Israel.
El-Sayed has been critical of Israel's military action in Gaza and supports cutting off U.S. military aid for Israel. But he's vowed to fight anti-Semitism, and he brushed off Trump's comments.
The man can't stay on focus. We're living through an affordability crisis that is generational. People are paying nearly $5 in gas because of a war he started, and half the time, if he's not talking about me, he's talking about the drapes in his ballroom.
The closer-than-expected primary win by El-Sayed, who's never held elected office, exposes a divided Democratic Party. His positions have been called extreme by critics.
So this was a big win for the far left in the Democratic Party. But will
can they win in the general? That's the big question.
Can he win in November?
If they do win in November, then I start seeing probably more of these kinds of candidates popping up in the Democratic Party in other states.
By the way, the Republican that he's going to be running against in November.
You're the last vestige, man. Who knew you'd be the standard for the Republicans in Michigan?
Guy named Mike Rogers is going to be running against him. The feds, meanwhile, are looking into a close call involving the president's official helicopter, Marine One.
The FAA and NTSB are investigating why this passenger jet was allowed to take off from Reagan National Airport near D.C. Tuesday, moments before President Trump took off from the White House on Marine One when airspace should have been cleared. The two aircraft breaching the FAA's minimum safe distance protocol.
Tower, just want to make sure you copy Marine One, 3 minutes to land.
Prior to takeoff, air traffic control audio capturing Marine One's pilots giving controllers multiple three-minute warnings, which under standard protocol would prompt controllers to then pause commercial traffic at Reagan. But during Tuesday's departure, controllers appearing not to hear that critical three-minute warning, one even mentioning the lack of advance notice.
Marine One, you said your proceeding is brief?
Yeah. National Tower, that's Marine One proceeding as brief.
Okay, no 3 minutes. Roger, proceed as brief.
The two aircraft momentarily coming within 1.5 horizontal miles and 500 vertical feet of each other, violating the FAA's safe distance procedures.
And this was an Envoy air flight. They're owned by American. It's one of their regional carriers.
What is going on in the skies around our nation's capital? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got Dulles that's had all those issues, then Reagan now having an issue here. I don't know the air traffic controllers over there. Something's not at right.
Just going to fly into Baltimore.
That's right. Stay away from it. Go to Newark that has all the problems. You'll be safer.
You know, back during the Winter Olympics, we told you about some of the male ski jumpers stuffing a little extra down their pants when getting measured for their suits. Not to impress the ladies, but to give them a competitive edge, because when it came time for the actual competition, that padding or whatever they put in there had been removed, and that left some extra fabric down in the crotch
flat
area.
Okay.
Yeah. And that extra fabric, then it would pop out their sides when they were flying through the air. That would give them an aerodynamic advantage. It's like a mini parachute. It kept them in the air longer.
Just like 5-6-year-old, we're laughing.
Well, now it's the women's turn. At the Tour de France Femme, one of the biggest bike races for women.
Dutch media has reported some teams have raised concerns about riders adding bra padding to help with their aerodynamics. The rounder the torso, so the thinking goes, the less wind resistance bikers will get on their thighs, making it easier to cut through the air. This is especially relevant in time trial events where riders are hunched in a different position and have to race against the clock. And there's actually some science to back this up. Those Dutch reports cite a study that found chest fairings like this could save about 0.8 seconds per kilometer. May not sound like a lot on its own, but the longest stage of the Tour de France Femme is 175 kilometers. That adds up to seconds that could make or break a tournament. The issue is apparently so concerning that the race's organizers have issued a new policy. No less than 10 minutes before setting off, cyclists have to have their outfits checked for any illegal modification. Anyone who's found to be breaking the rules could face fines or disqualification, meaning their chances of winning it all could be in wind.
So if you're watching this race and you're thinking, man, these women are built.
That's right. Yeah, built? Is that the word you're going to use? Man, they have some augmentation.
There's a reason.
All right.
Unless they stop them from doing it.
Maybe that's certainly why you tune in, because they do wear those tight biker outfits.
Just like the ski jumpers,
yeah.
Right? All right, taking one final break, and we'll be back to wrap things up with a look at today in history as the Mic Check continues on KRLD.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
Stick around at the top of the hour. We're going to hear from Russell Scott again. He is on the scene at a shooting in Northwest Dallas at a Walmart Sam's Club. They're Midway and 635.
Yeah, it's right next to each other, apparently.
Where a local police officer has been shot. And we've had Russell's gathering more information at the scene. And we'll have that for you in about, like I said, about 10 minutes, top of the hour. The
good news is KRLD sources are telling us that a suspect has been apprehended. Yep. It's at least one. We don't know if there are others. So we're going to continue to follow that story.
Today is August 6th. And as we look back on this date in history, we're going to start with one that I think you'll appreciate.
Yeah.
Ago today, 1986, it was officially announced that Timothy Dalton would become the fourth James Bond, replacing Roger Moore.
He was okay.
He only did two movies.
Yeah,
The Living Daylights and License to Kill.
He played the character as close to the novels as he possibly could. It wasn't like the Connery and Moore Bonds that were kind of made some jokes and whatever.
There was exactly
much more serious.
Yeah, and then he only did those two movies, and he got replaced by Pierce Brosnan, who didn't last long himself. August 6, 1965. It was 61 years ago today, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law.
The denial of the right to vote is still a deadly wrong. And the time for injustice has gone.
Now, more recently, the U.S. Supreme Court has gutted that law in two separate rulings. 70 years ago tonight, America lost one of its big TV networks.
This is the Dumont Television Network.
The Dumont Network.
I never even knew this.
Nope, I was not around for the Dumont Network. It was named after the man who invented the cathode ray tube back in 1931. The network had actually gone bankrupt 1 year prior, but August 6, 1956, they faded to black for good. And 81 years ago today, on this date in 1945, just a few weeks after the first atomic bomb test in the deserts of New Mexico, the U.S. became the first country to use one on the Japanese city of Hiroshima.
One of the crew members said, "My God," when he saw what had happened. What had been Hiroshima was a white mountain of smoke, and when we saw it first, it was already up to 25,000 feet. About 1,000 feet off the ground, it looked like boiling dust.
About 150,000 people died that day, and another 100,000 3 days later when a second bomb was dropped on Nagasaki. But it achieved the desired result because less than a week after that second bomb, Japan surrendered and the war was over. Those two bombs, by the way, named Little Boy and Fat Man, remain the only nuclear weapons ever dropped on a civilian population.
Who gave them those names? How did they get that? Little Boy and Fat Man, that's what we're going with here.
And the plane that dropped the first one,
Little Betty, or something?
The Enola Gay.
Enola Gay, that's it.
All right, that wraps it up for us. Mike Rogers, Austin York here. It's Mid-Morning Mic Check. Thanks to everyone who participated in the show today, especially you, Iron Balls.
Finally.
Nice to finally hear from you, buddy.
Yeah.
So we've got Chad Benson. He's coming up next. Hey, if you missed any of the show today, check out the podcast version, and we'll be back with you tomorrow to wrap up the week at 10 o'clock.